exposed position, and I'm sure the FDA doesn't really like me, and I would suggest that you get a second opinion, or at least get a couple of books out of the Biomed Library at UCLA on epilepsy, and then you'll probably know more about it than most doctors.
But what is that called?
Well, they're books on epilepsy.
Yeah, well, I've read so many of them, but they're so outdated.
This is true.
Uh-huh.
A number of people in Eugene, Oregon, were put on Dilantin, which is the...
Well, that's a very powerful drug.
I know, and these people were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and had absolutely no history of epilepsy before the woodpeckers. So it's possible to trigger these little neuronal seizures. Did she show delta spiking in the EEG?
What does that mean?
It's a sort of a hill and spike signature and an electroencephalogram.
I don't know that.
I wonder if you could get the encephalographic records, the chart recordings that were made from the doctor, and let another neurologist somewhere, a licensed medical doctor, I'm a physicist, not an MD, look at those. And I would certainly feel better about that if she were my daughter.
But you wouldn't be able to recommend a neurologist to me off the air.
I wouldn't dare.
No, Carol, that's not our function here. They're everywhere. Just call the Medical Association and ask for another one, and they will give you a name.
And what's this thing? Hello?
Yes.
And what's this thing about going to UCLA? What can I look for there?
I would just do a computer search on recent articles on the subject of epilepsy and seizures. They have a marvelous library out there.
They do.
Yeah, just ask them for that and they'll find it for you.
Or I'm going to do that because this seems very strange just to have one seizure like that.
Well, I would certainly not condemn her to a lifetime of phenobarbital.
Well, that's what I don't want. That's exactly what I don't want to do.
Don't forget, this is simply my own personal opinion.
Exactly. I share that view myself.
Okay, Carol, I hope that helps you. Right?
Thank you very much. It certainly does.
All right.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Good to have you both.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Robert Beck. And, Dr. Beck, you have told us a lot of things tonight that are certainly food for thought and perhaps a few strange dreams.
Well,
into it a little bit.
Give the standard disclaimer. I reserve the right to change my mind about any of this when we get better data. But, meanwhile...
This is the data as it stands right now.
Right.
Steve, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening to you both. It's a fascinating show.
Thank you.
And I've been doing some reading, and I have a question about free energy devices.
Okay.
And but before I get into this, the lady called Carol asked about epilepsy. She may want to contact Dr. Baker.
I tell you what, we don't want to get into that right now.
Fine.
That's what I think.
Okay, just a reference anyway.
They've got the clout.
I have the book, The Awesome Life Force. And there's a chapter on free energy
devices. Joe Cater.
Huh?
Joe Cater. He's an old friend of mine.
Oh. What's a caduceus coil? I have no idea what that is.
All right. A caduceus coil.
Caduceus coil.
See, caduceus, it would look like the two serpents entwined about the staff that is the symbol of the medical profession. And this device was thrust upon the scientific community in the mid-1950s by Wilbert Smith, who was with the Canadian Department of Transport, which is their equivalent of our Federal Communications Commission. And what he did is he took some ferrite loopstick cores. In those days, I think they were about a half inch in diameter and maybe 6 inches long. He started winding at one end two separate windings that crossed at a particular angle as these turns proceeded up the coil form. And he felt that they were producing an anomalous electromagnetic wave. A bunch of amateur radio operators in Canada began experimenting with these, and apparently they put out something that might even be called a scalar wave today. So basically a caduceus coil is like the two serpents, one going clockwise, the other counterclockwise around a vertical staff.
Is there a blueprint or is anyone making it?
No, you can wind your own. They're quick and dirty. I wound dozens of them. I wasn't able to find any effects one way or another, but maybe I wasn't doing it exactly right.
Well, I think it's very interesting about Wilbert Smith. You know where he says he got the information to
from
do
the flying saucers?
From the Venetians, right?
Well,
from Venus.
What caught my attention, it doesn't heat up even with high amperage. That would be a great advantage.
That was one of the claims, and until a number of people replicate these independently, the jury is still out on a number of these devices.
I see. Would you have a blueprint if I go to that meeting?
No, we sort of went through this about 30 years ago, and it comes up from time to time, like Mobius coils, Caduceus coils, time delay built into the coil with ferrite beads. These are absolutely fascinating experimental frontier areas, but different persons give different reports of what they get. So until it stabilizes, I really don't have too much of an opinion on that.
Make your own and play with it.
Yeah, build it. It's
well, I like to. That's why I'd like to know how. How about devices to help learning faster, such as subliminal tapes or any other things? Do you work in that area?
Yes, I've seen a lot of these. The super learning and the... well, I guess Hemisync, and
Hemisync certainly does that.
Right.
Dr. Flanagan's Neurophone is very effective in this area.
And brain tuners, of course, stimulate some of the neurotransmitters that enhance memory, and when you have a better memory, you learn faster. Yes, there's a great deal of technology that's addressed this very problem. And we talk about it from time to time, but it wasn't a topic that we... intend to bring up on April the 6th at the meeting.
Okay,
does that help you, Steve?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your
question. I'll be there.
All right, good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
She's a bright...
Dr. Robert Beck is with us. Get to as many of these calls as we can. Doug, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. It's nice to talk to you on the phone. It's hard to get into you sometimes. Dr. Beck, it's nice to talk to you again, too. I've talked to you several times at the local dowsing meetings in Orange County.
Oh, hi there.
Hi. And Dolak, I'm the one that's nuts about Bandini's little black box.
All right, yeah.
For my motorhome I'm trying to convert.
Sure.
But my question is, I'm a little confused with these hertz, these low electrical waves and stuff that you've been talking about all night.
Extremely low.
Yeah. You said that they were predominant in, like, the religious areas or higher elevations and stuff like that where people were feeling euphoric or felt better.
Let's put it this way. The amplitude of the signal seemed to be higher in certain places than others. Anywhere in the Earth ionosphere cavity, you're going to get roughly the same spectra if you're on a node. But this can vary from a few hundred feet from, say, 25 microgauss to over 200. You can have maybe... an order of magnitude differential in the amplitude just by moving your coil around in the area.
Yeah.
And apparently some of the sacred places had very high amplitude, so something in our ancestors or the Indians could sense this, and that's where they set up shop.
Well, I don't know if I'm off base on this, but how does negative ions fall into that?
It doesn't. It's we're talking about cats, canaries, and bananas.
Okay, because... from what it sounded like, the negative ions for like negative ion generators and the positive ions and the wind.
Whole different side.
Whole different ballgame there.
They're good for you, but not for the same reason.
Okay, because I thought there was some similarity the way you were talking.
Well, if you like negative ions, get yourself a Boston Fern.
No, it's just negative ion generators were one of the things we were going to talk about so people could build their own and build their measurement next Saturday the 6th.
Uh-huh. And that's going to be in the L.A.?
Yeah, it'll be at the Airport Marriott Hotel, and we're starting at 10 a.m. in the morning. And give Paul a call at 393-9405, and looks like we're going to have a full house, so he'll make room for you.
What was the number again, 393?
393-9405.
Okay, Doug,
okay, great. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right, glad to have you on.
Take care.
We have time for maybe one more call. We'll try to get to, what is that, Henrik?
Yes.
Hi, Henrik.
Good evening, and Bill and Dr. Begg, it's been a pleasure listening to you, as it always is, Bill.
Thank you.
Your programs are so outstanding. I'd like to ask Dr. Begg a question about a book by Joe Gudovich. His name was mentioned previously here in your broadcast. It's titled Magic Signs of the Future. Are
right.
you aware of that?
Yes, I am, and that is one of the better works that's been done on radionics and psychotronics. It's an excellent
right.
little
now,
book.
Now, he speaks in this book about L fields. Which I'm very interested in because
all right, that was,
they affect people.
Harold Saxton Burr, and we'll bring down an L-field meter to the meeting next Saturday.
Oh, that's terrific. I'll tell you why I say this. I have written a book called Vibrations, and I mentioned the Gudovich book in here. In fact, at the time I wrote the book, it came out in November, I said it would be nice if the science scientific world could construct an instrument that could measure these L fields. Apparently,
right.
This has been done.
Dr. Burr, who was professor emeritus of physiology at Yale, of course,
right.
About 40 years ago was using vacuum tubes to measure these body fields. Well, today you can buy for 39 cents a BiFET transistor that does a far better job, and you can build your own meter for, about $15 or $20. We will have a circuit diagram for doing this.
Oh, that's great.
At the April the 6th seminar at the L.A. Airport Marriott.
Okay. Does that? I'm sorry we got to go here, Henrik, but our time has run out.
Well,
come on down and introduce yourself. We'll get into them.
When you got to go, you got to go.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob Beck, for being with us tonight. During the month of April, we'll have our open forum after Dodger baseball every night. But on May 4th, Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden will join us. And we'll talk about the effects of the space people on us. We'll see you then.
Happy celebration, 25.